Welcome in to today's episode of the Blanket Coverage Podcast. I'm your host, Noah Parker, joined always by my co-host, Jack Wallace, who is on FaceTime in Atlanta, Georgia. What is up?
Not too much. Always happy to be back and getting some more NFL exit interviews as we get closer and closer to the 2020 draft, our first real sports moment in the last month and a half.
Yeah, the draft is quickly approaching. I'm actually working on this week a draft preview, so that should be pretty interesting. Be on the lookout for that on TCU 360 when it comes out. But today we've got the Rams, the Eagles, and the Bills. And have you watched the Michael Jordan documentary yet?
I actually haven't had time today. I've had a really busy week coming up, and I have not had to do that. So we can pin that. I do want to talk about that when I get around to finally getting those down. But
no, yeah, it's really good. I still haven't seen episode two. I'm waiting on that tonight.
One note about the podcast, if y'all are wondering why we switched up to three teams, it's because the draft is getting here very quickly, and we want to make sure to get our full look at each of these teams before the draft hits, because that's sort of the goal. We'll get all these in before, and then we're going to have a thing after the draft of a very general overall. We're not going to do this long format for everyone after the draft, but we'll have a big episode for all the teams, and again, giving our A through F of draft grades and all that will happen afterwards. I can't wait for that. It's going to be a ton of fun. But
yeah, that's going to be really fun. I did not foresee all my work coming right before the NFL draft, which may just be bad planning on my part.
But see, now that I think about it, imagine if we had all the March Madness stuff. As I know it's so sad to have that in, but imagine having all that on top of this. That would have been pretty tough.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Next spring is going to be interesting for us.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt. Well, you know what else was interesting last season for the Los Angeles Rams, who went 9-7, third in the NFC West, did not make the playoffs a year after making the Super Bowl and really disappointing everyone against the Patriots.
Worst Super Bowl ever.
Yeah, so what were some moments over the season that I guess LA fans can look, if they have any fans, can look back on positively? Hey.
The Rams are the L.A. team that actually has fans. They're the real L.A. team. We don't count the Chargers. And I say we as in football fans and NFL fans, not even someone that has any connection to Los Angeles. But
here's really the biggest thing. The Rams have no connection to Los Angeles whatsoever, other than that they moved there.
Well, they were the original team there forever.
Right. But
like they haven't been there
Like, there are no L.A. Rams fans left. There are only people that have become L.A. Rams fans.
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I'd say their fan base really isn't that bad. I mean, you see these games and they fill up, people come to it. I wouldn't say they're the problem here. I think it's the Chargers is what sort of the team that everyone endlessly bullies and makes fun of.
Are in a completely different conversation there.
No, I think they definitely have fans in Los Angeles. That is their team. I was happy they moved back from St. Louis. They really shouldn't have ever been in the first place. This was always a Los Angeles team, and it's confusing why they went there. But yeah, they were there from 1946 until 1994, and then 2016 to now.
I did not know they were there in 94.
Yeah, they started in 1946 all the way through the mid-90s. So, yeah,
it feels like everyone in LA, though, is a Raiders fan. Maybe that's just
really?
Maybe that's just me watching too much Straight Outta Compton. But
that might be that thing, because I feel like it's still the Rams city, but but anyway, their biggest moment of the season was, for me as a Falcons fan, definitely loved when they took very much care of the Saints early on in the season. That was a final score of 27-9, which is just 1 point better when the Falcons beat the Saints at their home 26-9. Also, a 5-3 start to the season was a pretty favorable one, including wins over all three of the NFC South opponents, with the Panthers and the Falcons on the road, two other Ws. And the Bengals, a couple of their wins. Their three losses were a weirdly interesting shootout with Tampa Bay, one of the oddest games of the year, a 55-40 loss. I still can't understand that game. And then a 1 point loss at Seattle and a 13 point loss against San Francisco, who, of course, would go on to win the NFC West and the NFC. So a pretty solid start for this team, but it kind of unraveled a little bit going into the second half under a team that really just couldn't get their act together. And you can lead us into that.
Yeah, so they named their stadium United Airlines Field.
Now, they named the field United. I did some research on this because, I mean, I've been a big SC fan for a while, so I've been looking at it. and it's technically the name is United Airlines Field at Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. But because the Rams have a sponsorship with American Airlines, they actually had to take all the United stuff off of the field when they played. So they weren't allowed to have the sponsorships during the games, which means it was only there for the USC games, which is like six times a year. It's really weird.
Sounds like quite the conundrum.
It was very strange.
In losses, it was usually their defense's fault, even though you could argue the best players on this team are on defense.
Jalen Which is Ramsey, weird. Aaron it was Donald really strange. Are
two of the top players at their respective positions. Does not make any sense. And for reference, they gave up 55 to Tampa Bay, 30 to Seattle, 45 to Baltimore, 44 to Dallas, and 34 to San Francisco. So it's pretty much any time they played a good team, it was usually pretty rough on defense. It was their first year out of the playoffs since 2016. Sean McVay has been pretty good up to this point. And the losses of Dante Fowler and Corey Littleton are going to really hurt for this defense, especially one that had a lot of trouble last year.
This is an NFC West that is going to keep getting better. I mean, if this is a team that goes 9-7 and beats a good hand of decent teams and you're third in your division, that's a huge problem. And now we see San Francisco still getting stronger, Seattle not going away. Arizona is definitely going to get stronger now, getting D-Hop and then Murray another year under his belt. And again, a great staff there too. This is a dangerous division. It's only going to get more dangerous. And for the Rams that, of course, were just at the top of the mountain, were just there in Atlanta playing in the Super Bowl, are already seeing themselves slip further and further away. And so many guys on that team that were on that Super Bowl are already gone.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think LA fans and the LA Rams necessarily need to be worried because teams do ebb and flow like this. I don't think they were a flash in the pan.
That's fair. Look at the Falcons in 2016 after the Super Bowl collapse. We still went back to the playoffs the next year and still have a, I mean, we didn't fall apart. We weren't as good, but yeah, it still was a playoff team.
The 49ers are going to be really tough. I'd say the Seahawks are the most vulnerable as far as a second place team. And I mean, you look at how well Russell Wilson just carried that team last year. He's going to have to do that again if they want to have another good year this year. And so I think the LA Rams can really capitalize on the ebbs and flows of some of these teams, especially with the Seahawks, who tend to ebb and flow a lot more than most.
And to be fair, though, didn't they have some insane amount of running backs get injured last year? Was that right?
The Seahawks? Yeah, they did.
So, and with that, along with your best wide receiver at that point, arguably being DK Metcalf as essentially a freshman wide receiver sitting out there. I mean, I get it a little bit. I get they had a lot of troubles there. I'd like to see this team a little more steady. We're going to get it to Seahawks, obviously, in a few days. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this division plays out. And, of course, the biggest news of the Rams coming out of the offseason wasn't losing Gurley, wasn't losing Littleton, wasn't losing Fowler. It was their logo and redesign of everything. They are redesigning because, of course, this is their final season, supposed final season in the Coliseum, and they will be moving on to their new stadium, which is officially called SoFi Stadium in Inglewood, California, which they will share with the Chargers, which really means the Chargers will be renting it out occasionally.
Right.
And, I mean, it's not their stadium, but the stadium looks absolutely gorgeous. It's still, I think, on schedule to get done on time. But with that, they changed their wordmark. They changed their colors, kind of. It really was more defining it as they are now the official blue and yellow that we've known the Rams to be forever, and with some white in it, which is right. I love that change. I think it was perfect for them. They needed to change to that. And the wordmark is good. I like the fonts, the wordmark, and the advertising was great for it. But the logos were where everybody had a problem. The new LA with the horn in it is horrendous. And then I don't mind the alternate with the actual Ram head. I think it's a cool throwback to the 50s logo they used to have. People generally didn't really have much of a problem with it. But, oh, man, the LA looks horrible. And even if you look at it compared to any other NFL logo, I mean, the draft board. Look at the draft board when the draft comes up. And it will look like it's an XFL. It just looks like an XFL team. It looks like a joke team thing. Yeah, it's like,
I don't see how teams keep hiring these graphic designers and then they come up with that crap.
Amazing.
And the team's like, yep, looks good.
And tomorrow officially, before that, I don't know if you saw today, but the Patriots released their new updated uniforms.
The new look.
We're going to talk about it tomorrow. I wish they still had some silver pants. I'm a little annoyed they didn't have those.
I'm not a big silver pants guy. I don't like them on Georgia. I don't like them on the Cowboys. I'm not for it.
I mean, I'm not exactly a fan of either of those teams either, but I think it sort of fit their look better, I guess. But I don't know. I thought it was kind of nice. Their jersey, I think, were really nice. I think that was the kind of look everybody sort of wanted, with the simple stripes and the blue. I think it looks great.
I wish their primary away look had white pants and was just basically a white color rush.
Yeah, that would have been nicer.
Instead of the white on blue. I do like the white on blue. I think it's a clean look, but I think the white on white is much cleaner.
And again, like I mentioned with post-draft, once we finally get everybody in, I do want to have a podcast talking about all that, just a shorter little special episode. But the final team, or one of the last teams, not entirely sure who hasn't gone yet. But I do know that probably the most anticipated one of all of that is going to be the LA Chargers, and they do release tomorrow. So we will be getting images and everything with the new Chargers relook tomorrow, so get excited for that. But to finish off with the Rams of their new best performance, this team ended up being a team that was, you could say, was a little bit disappointing. Of course, winning the NFC and falling this far from grace did. I think a lot of that was Gurley's production rate, which, of course, now he joined the Atlanta Falcons, but he went way down in how he performed from last year to this year, and that definitely hurt this offense considerably when you have Jared Goff. And, again, a decent receiving core behind Kupp, who seems to always be injured, but also a guy in Robert Woods is very solid. I know they just got rid of their third wide receiver, who was – what's his name?
Brandon Cooks,
yes. So I understand that move as well. But, yeah, this is a team that was, like you said, with a lot of these NFC West teams, a lot of ebb and flow with these guys. And so it'll be interesting to see how they respond to that. But moving on to the safest positions, go through some of the safest ones, because there are plenty you could name on this.
So we got to start at defensive tackle, because Aaron Donald is probably still the best at his position. He's an absolute game wrecker. The problem is you need someone else on that defensive line that can take the pressure off of him. At wide receiver, Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods are still a good duo, especially with Goff throwing to them. And Goff is no superstar quarterback, but there's no need for a change. And they just handed him a pretty sizable extension in the past couple years. Let's go to least safe positions, because now they have a huge hole at running back. Now, Daryl Henderson had a great year last year. I think they see a lot of potential in him, but still, going from Todd Gurley to Daryl Henderson is a pretty big downgrade, in my opinion. As far as edge rusher, they have a huge hole now. Because they lost Dante Fowler, and now they really have to look towards filling that in the draft, because there's not many edge rushers still on the market. And they need a cornerback, too. They have no one across from Jalen Ramsey. They need a backup. They need a third corner. These are all going to be huge points of emphasis, I think, in the draft for the Rams, which you can take us through now.
And just to mention a little bit on that, too, we're going to talk about a lot of teams that need cornerbacks. I mean, I think that is not to look ahead too far on other teams here, but there are a lot of teams around this that could really need one. I mean, I know we're talking about the Eagles and Bills later in this podcast, so I know you could argue both them, too, but cornerbacks are a really big need for a lot of teams around mid-draft right here. So you can see a lot of these teams try to just sort of keep chasing for one and potentially see a bunch of trades and mess around in the draft order. But looking over all the draft, we are at our third team in a row without a first-round pick. The Rams start off with the second round with the 52nd overall, third round with the 84th, a third round in the 104th, which is a compensatory pick, a fourth-round pick, and a sixth, and then a seventh to close it out. That's a total of six picks for the Rams. Players to look out for, it's interesting to see who they're going to try to take first here at the second round, because you're going down. I mean, it's 52nd to 84th. There's a pretty deep decline in a lot of these guys you're going to want to get. And a lot of this depends on who's going to be taken above you. As I get, a lot of this is going to be because you're looking for a cornerback and because it's going to be taken a lot. I'm thinking more like a Jeff Gladney or Bryce Hall kind of guy, just because the really top tier guys are just not going to be around this late. I mean, it's second round, 52nd overall. It's the best guys are all going to be gone here. You're going to just sort of see what you can get. If you can get a decent defensive end as well, Terrell Lewis for Alabama and Julian Okwara for Notre Dame are both two really solid guys at the end. And then if you want to get a running back, I get losing Gurley, as we mentioned, is a bad thing. I would still wait for a running back. I would take them pretty late. You do not need to rush and get one early. And that's more like a Cam Akers from Florida State or Zach Moss from Utah are kind of going to be your guys to look out for here. But they definitely could use some depth there. The Rams right now on their roster, just to check who they actually have at running back.
It's Daryl Henderson and somebody else.
John Kelly and Malcolm Brown. So it is a
pretty John Kelly. Go Vols.
Oh, that is right. I do remember from there. And Kelly, yeah, hasn't done too much. 30 rushing attempts for 83 yards. He was a sixth-round pick in 2018. So, yeah, they could look for somebody kind of like that, where it's a solid guy deeper in the draft, some backup help right there, and then even, yeah, Darrell Henderson, third round, 70th pick overall, running back. So this would actually be the third year in a row they could take a running back, but you might need one again. So it's going to be tough. And even, yeah, then their starting guy, which could be Malcolm Brown even, he was undrafted. So it was undrafted from the 2015 draft. And then a guy from 2018, a guy from 2019, and you might get a guy from 2020 here because, again, these guys aren't really leading the way. You could just throw somebody in to get some backup in there. That's more what I see this pick being, but I would look more for a sixth or seventh round pick with one of these guys.
I honestly think their second pick in round three is a perfect place to address this spot. I think you can get really good value out of round three for a running back, but
yeah, if they can get the DN and the cornerback question answered, they would then look for them. And then some they've also been I think I saw on the Ringer they were looking to maybe get some interior offensive linemen, if I'm not mistaken. I'll check on that to make sure I'm right. But perhaps some of that. And then maybe some other linebacker spots too to help out, that they might look for more free agency for that. It depends who else you can get because they're in a lot of positions. But I would prioritize linebacker over running back here.
Definitely.
I think Fowler's loss is bigger than Gurley, so you need to get somebody else in there to help out.
Oh, absolutely. I think that wraps up our coverage of the Rams, if you don't have anything else.
No, and again, a trend y'all probably will notice is that most of our talks with these teams, the longer we get in, are going to be shorter just because a lot of them are less things to critique and talk about. I mean, the Bengals, you could spend days talking about the disaster in Cincinnati, but a lot of these teams up here, like even at their worst, the Rams really weren't that bad. Again, the Eagles and Bills really weren't that bad. I mean, these are now we're getting into play. I mean, that was the last of the non-playoff teams, so we're now getting into some more serious teams here. But yes, we now enter our first playoff team, the Philadelphia Eagles, 9-7 in the dumpster fire of the NFC East. So we are now done with the NFC East after this team. Thank the Lord. They finished first. They were the NFC East quote-unquote champions, saying that because it's not really an award. They went to the wild card and lost immediately 9-17 against Seattle, which, to be fair, was a really good 5 seed in Seattle, so I'll give them credit. And the best moments of the season, again, somehow winning the NFC East, pretty bad if you didn't, looking at you, Cowboys. A 4-0 finish to the season, clinched a division, which is a third straight year in the playoffs for the Eagles, coming off their Super Bowl win. So very uncommon in the NFL history for teams to be present in a Super Bowl kind of on a one-off thing and continue to be that dominant right after for a team that's not like a dynasty of Patriots. And 6 Pro Bowlers for this team. Fletcher Cox at D-tackle, Brandon Brooks at guard, Jason Kelce at center, Lane Johnson at tackle, Zach Ertz at tight end, and Rick Lovato at long snapper, PFF number one offensive line, and Miles Sanders, a standout new running back there in Philly.
Well, they also had some bad moments, and this was a pretty good team. When you look at it, all things considered, their problem was the offense was horrendous because all of their receivers got hurt. Alshon Jeffrey looks to be no longer serviceable. Nelson Aguilar, we all remember the famous video of that guy critiquing Nelson Aguilar's hands, to say the least. And they were basically left with Greg Ward and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside at receivers. So definitely the loss of the receivers, count that in the Hall of Infamy as far as the 2019 Philadelphia Eagles. They did lose to the 5th seed in the playoffs at home, which somehow they secured a home game. I think if there was any team that was not deserving of a home game in the playoffs, definitely the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles here. And they only managed one decent win outside of their division, which was at Green Bay pretty early in the season.
Which does count. I mean, that is a significant win. For safest positions, offensive line, this is as good as it gets. I mean, we mentioned PFF number one overall. This offensive line is absolutely insane. You have 3 Pro Bowlers on your O-line. I mean, it isn't fair. This Philadelphia Eagles team is an unbelievable offensive line, and that's why, even with Wentz getting hurt and running backs being all over the place and a defense, I mean, you have all these problems, but if your O-line is that good, you're always going to be in contention for stuff. And so that's what saves them. So if you can get some more pieces there, maybe we can see another Super Bowl run. You never know. We didn't think that could happen 2018. I know I certainly didn't, and yet it still did. So giving the Eagles credit, got to give the Eagles credit. So offensive line is what gets them gets the job done. Cornerback acquisition of Darius Slay was massive. Darius Slay is incredible. Trevor, a long, long list of Lions that continue to have their career wasted continues to go on. Calvin Johnson is on there. Matthew Stafford's still going on, and Darius Slay, another great addition. So amazing that we had all three on the team at the same time, and they still couldn't win a playoff game. So really don't understand that. But Darius Slay, getting him over there was excellent for them. And then quarterback Carson Wentz pretty obviously is going nowhere. Great guy for them, considered one of the better quarterbacks in the conference. So, yeah, really no issue there.
So as far as least safe positions, linebacker is an absolute wasteland. They have nobody to fill that gap at the moment, and it's going to be an uphill climb to get to that point. I think this could be a big area of need in the draft, but of course, I think their biggest need is at wide receiver because they lost Aguilar. That's not a big deal, but Alshon Jeffery is pretty much all that's left of players that have shown that they can play at a higher level, and I think that's where they have to go in the draft. Definitely. And they need someone across from Darius Slay because he's good, but he has no real elite counterpart. So if they want another shutdown corner, if they want to be able to cover all over the field, they're going to need to put somebody across from Darius Slay back there. But the wide receiver talk really leads us into the draft, where the Eagles have a first round, second round, third round, three fourth rounds, a fifth round, and a sixth round. No seventh round pick for this team. So who are some guys that the Eagles should be looking at through this process?
As you mentioned, linebackers, there's just you got to pick somebody. I mean, you get a first-round pick here, which is obviously helpful, and you're going to have to look – you have to look for linebackers first. I mean, I know we're also going to look at corners. I mean, maybe a safety in Grant Delpit's always could be useful. And, again, wide receivers definitely needs to be picked here, but you have to look at linebacker first. I could see Patrick Queen going off the board here. I could see Zach Bond out of Wisconsin. These are the kind of guys you're going to want to look for early on because you have to get some linebacker core in there. Some other top linebackers out of this draft, because there are certainly a good amount – obviously, Isaiah Simmons, the top one, will be gone. Kenneth Murray out of Oklahoma will likely be gone, though maybe he could stick around. His positioning right now is about, I think, at 19th in the draft at a value. So with the pick at 21st, maybe you could snag him. Guys like Jordan Brooks out of Texas Tech and Troy Dye are a little bit out of Oregon, are a little bit lower. Those are more kind of like maybe a third-round kind of pick. So really, you're going to look for a guy like Queen or Bond. If Murray's on the board, he'll be taken here. I don't think there's any question Kenneth Murray's going to go here if he's still on the board. He seems to be the best linebacker after Isaiah Simmons. And so I could see him being taken right there. Looking a little bit later in the draft, you could look for wide receiver. I would, for me, because this is a really deep wide receiver draft, I would wait on the wide receiver. I would try to get a safety or corner first and then do a little bit later wide receiver because a lot of these guys are deeper in the draft. So that would be somebody like a Michael Pittman Jr. out of USC, maybe a Devin Duvernay out of Texas. And maybe somebody like Tyler Johnson from Minnesota, Donovan Peoples-Jones from Michigan. You're looking for one of those wide receivers. It's going to be a solid guy for you, but it's not any kind of top tier talent that's going to go too early. So that's a Rams pick you can maybe see in that second round pick, third round. You got three fourth round picks. A lot of those guys could be around those. I know those are a little bit deeper. Most of these guys might be gone by then. So you need a wide receiver to start up early. You can't get a deeper pick wide receivers. That's why I'm thinking there's no way they're going to pick one with that later fourth or fifth or sixth round pick. You got to get one earlier because all you got is Jeffrey.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards a receiver for the Eagles in the first round. I think this is a sweet spot for Justin Jefferson, should he make it this far. And I've even seen rumors that the Eagles are looking at trading up with the Cleveland Browns, who are wanting to trade down in order to get Ezra Cleveland, the tackle out of Boise State, who they can definitely get with the 21st pick if they were to trade down. And the Eagles really like this receiver class. They love CeeDee Lamb, they love Jerry Jeudy, and they really love Henry Ruggs. And so I think all three of those guys could be in play, and they would thereby trade up ahead of three receiver needy teams in the Jets, the Raiders, and the 49ers,
that is
which
true,
would
yeah.
be huge. I think Justin Jefferson's going to be the pick if he makes it to 21. But also, I mean, if Patrick Queen and Kenneth Murray are there at 21, which both of those guys are probably higher than the 21st pick on any big board, especially with the need of middle linebacker involved. That's a very important player on your defense.
I just think you'd have to draft them first because there's just too many good wide receivers and not enough good linebackers like that.
I agree to a certain extent. I just think the main thing that held this team back, especially in a bad division last year, was their receiver play. And Carson Wentz really needs a target other than Zach Ertz and Miles Sanders. He needs someone on the outside, and Alshon Jeffrey is just not that guy anymore. He's too big, he's too slow, and he's hurt too often.
That is fair. To move on, we will be getting to our final team, if you don't have anything else to add about the Eagles here.
I got nothing.
We got the Buffalo Bills, a team that I was, I'll admit, actively going for a bunch at the end of the season, mostly because it was just so sad to watch them, and you just had to hope they would get something. For the Bills, we actually got a good amount to talk about. I got a bunch of stats here for them because they sure did set and break a lot of new things this season. Bills were 10-6, so yes, this is our first double-digit win team of our exit interviews. They finished second in the AFC East behind the Patriots, unsurprisingly. Playoffs also were the other team to lose in the wild card on the AFC side, and it was a 19-22 overtime loss at Houston, which was, wow, was that a great playoff game. I mean, very disappointing to see Houston win, not anti-Houston for me, just more pro-Buffalo, but really, really, really amazing game. This was incredible. I just got to give the Bills credit for a great season. To look over how great the season was for them, even though I know, lost in the wild card. But it was their second winning season in 3 years, their fourth in the last 20 years, greatly improved from a 6-10 2018 record, so a huge slip of four games. They were 9-4 in week 14, which was the first time since 1996 that the team won 9 of their first 13 games. Then when they won, when they won 9, it matched their highest win total in the 21st century, which was in 04, 14, and 17. When they hit 10 wins, it was the most W's in a season since 1999, and they were the only other AFC East team besides the Patriots to make the playoffs more than once in the 2010s decade.
Wow.
Which is a depressing statistic. And to lead on with that, there are a few more here about worst moments in the season to go for the Bills.
So their playoff win drought is extended to 25 years now after they choked a 16-0 lead in overtime loss to the Texans. Not only tragic because the Texans won a football game and Bill O'Brien gets to keep his job, but also just tragic because this was a Bills team that a lot of people liked. But we saw it towards the end of the season. They had a 1-3 end of the season after a 9-4 start. So they really had a chance there to gain some ground and to really make their mark on this season, and they ended it in kind of a boring fashion. And even with their very easy schedule, they only beat two decent teams. They beat the Steelers and they beat the Titans, and that was the Mason Rudolph Steelers or the Duck Hodges Steelers. I can't remember. The Titans a pretty good win, but I believe that was a Mariota game. Or that may have just been Tannehill's one stinker out of the season.
They also beat the Cowboys on the road, but I declined to say that was a very decent team. But, I mean, I would say the Cowboys were at least average. Like, they weren't a horrible team, but that was the Thanksgiving Day win. That was a pretty big deal for them. That, again, was sort of the which one of these decent teams is going to become a little bit better, and towards the Bills, unsurprisingly.
Yeah, and let's talk about Josh Allen real quick, because we don't really have him listed anywhere. What did you see out of Josh Allen last year, and where do you kind of project him going in the future?
Allen was an interesting case last year because they didn't really love his statistics, but I get on the ground sort of took a bunch away from that. Like, it made it a little bit different. He definitely improved a lot. Again, was 5-6 as a starter in 2018, was 10-6 as a starter in 2019, so obviously much better for him. In terms of completion percentage, improved by a good amount, went from 52.8 to 58.8. Total yards increased by over 1,000 from 2074 to 3089. Touchdowns doubled from 10 to 20. Interceptions cut by 3 from 12 to 9. And yards per attempt was actually pretty close. Only went up a little bit from 6.5 to 6.7. And looking at a few other things on here, a quarterback rating went up from 67.9 to 85.3, so a huge jump for him. Did take 10 more More sacks, though, and had four fourth quarter comebacks, five game winning drives. So overall, it was a very good season for him. I liked him a lot, how he improved. And overall rushing, he rushed for 510 yards for 2.4 yards before contact. And sorry, I'm trying to find the exact stats here. Touchdowns is...
I don't even think stats necessarily tell the full story touchdowns for Josh Allen's season.
To nine. No, I understand. Because
I'm not disagreeing with any of those stats. They're statistics. I think stats don't necessarily tell the whole story for Josh Allen last year. Because if you look at his receiver core, it was John Brown, Cole Beasley, and then really nothing else. Now you put Stephon Diggs in that mix. I think it could be a really, really interesting season coming up for the Buffalo Bills, and they're definitely one of my teams to watch as far as teams that could really stick out next year and stand out and improve. And really, you look at Tom Brady leaving the division, that should be in one of their best moments because he has been just a thorn in the Bills' side for so long.
And yeah, it's going to change up a lot of how things play. And I do believe, and I've been in this camp for a while, that I believe it is more Belichick than it is Brady in terms of the Patriots dynasty. Though I do think they work enough well off each other that both of them are considerably weaker without one of the two.
So to talk about some positions for the Buffalo Bills, let's go into their top three safest positions at linebacker. Edmonds is still one of the best in the league. After his Pro Bowl nod, certainly looks like a promising player in his career. And Alexander and Matt Milano are also very solid. So a pretty solid linebacking core for this team. And that's really the theme of this defense is their defense. Because their entire secondary is really good also. Corners, Tre'Davious White and Levi Wallace, and safeties Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde are also four really good players, and you don't really have to worry about anything on that secondary because those guys are so good. And at wide receiver one now, the trade for Stephon Diggs, granted they sold a first round for him, also paired with Cole Beasley, is a great duo for Josh Allen to be able to make some plays.
Yeah, this is a defense that's been absolutely excellent for the Bills for a while. They've been sort of known as the strong defensive team, and there's a big reason why for that. These guys are always putting up wild numbers and doing an excellent job. And again, great drafting too. Getting Tremaine Edmonds has been a fantastic pick. He's been absolutely amazing. Getting the Pro Bowl nod was worth it. This kid's been fantastic. And like you said, for wide receiver, having Cole Beasley was solid from the Cowboys, as we mentioned back with the Cowboys podcast yesterday. And then the trade for Stephon Diggs was excellent. Again, they sold their first round off for him, so another team without a first round pick. But it probably was worth it. Stephon Diggs is an excellent wide receiver, and getting him off Minnesota was a big deal. And again, we'll get to Minnesota tomorrow and talk about the ramifications of the Vikings. But yeah, this was very solid for the Bills, a team that really lacked that receiving option for Josh Allen, who grew tremendously in the last season as a quarterback. And to see what he can do next year with, again, Brady's out of the division, you have Stephon Diggs alongside you. I mean, the Bills are going to be the team to beat in the AFCs.
Yeah, and add Ed Oliver to that list of great players because Ed Oliver is flashing a ton of potential. I don't know how he fell as far as he did in the draft last year because he is a stellar prospect.
Yeah, he's been fantastic for the Bills. Moving on to the least safe positions, a few of these guys, we're actually going to talk about a little bit more of the defense, and then we talk about how good the defense is, but edge rusher losing a Shaq Lawson to Miami is going to hurt this team. They do still have Hughes, the former Horned Frog, so having him at that DM position has been great for them. He'll continue to be solid. He's definitely going to be the starter there, but they're going to need a counterpart, and they don't really have one right there, so looking for another DM there is going to be key. Cornerback, White is a Pro Bowler, but again, he could use help. We're finding that trend being very common along a lot of these teams where they have one really stud corner, and it kind of trickles off after that, and that's going to happen with this team. This Bills team, it doesn't really have another really solid corner out there. I mean, even looking at their list of ones, there are not really any that stand out too much. So it's going to be tricky to see what they're going to do to try to replace this slot. And then the last one is interior offensive lineman. Their overall PFF ranking for offensive line is 21st in the league, and guard tends to be one of their weaker spots. So they're going to try to look for somebody on the inside to help out with Josh Allen. Morgan, we mentioned with sacks, Josh Allen was sacked 28 times in 2018. That went up to 38 times last year. It's difficult to win a lot of games when you're getting sacked 38 times in a season.
No, absolutely. And that could be a big point of emphasis for the draft, where the Bills have a second-round pick, a third-round pick, fourth-round pick, fifth-round pick, 2 sixth-round picks, and a seventh-round pick. And, of course, they traded away their first-round pick for Stephon Diggs. That seems like it's going to work out. Stephon Diggs, a very talented and young receiver, to pair with Josh Allen there.
So, looking at the Bills' defense and offense overall going into this draft, we're going to try to see who are some of our top guys to look for who the Bills can pick. With one of these guys, Bradley Anae and Darrell Taylor, Bradley out of Utah, Darrell out of Tennessee, both are defensive ends. Again, with this team, you mentioned you need another edge rusher. They do have Mario Addison at defensive end, and they also picked up, seeing else on this list, Quentin Jefferson on the defensive line as well. So getting these guys in is helpful for them. Again, Mario Addison being a big help, he will be the other defensive end likely. But to have another strong guy coming in there will be nice. Again, there's not really any position I can see on this team they need to immediately fix now, I would say. I mean, maybe you could look at cornerback for another guy out there just because it is a little bit weaker. But overall, it's a pretty strong team for what you got. And again, a lot of the team that is a little bit not as good are usually really, really young. So the Bills are in a very good position. They've rebuilt this team very well. And again, we probably, again, this was the best team since the late 90s. I think we're going to see the best era of the Buffalo Bills since the 90s in the next 2 years. It's already started with this season already in 2019. So I can see some of the cornerbacks being a
Igbenohene.
Igbenohene. Yes, again, we mentioned his name earlier. For another list of needs, as well as Damon Arnett. We've mentioned him a lot, the Ohio State cornerback. I still think he's very underrated. It's going to be exciting to see where he's going to end up because he will get drafted at a decent rank. And then Natane Muti is a Fresno State offensive guard. I could see him going for this team too. And that's honestly who I think this team's going to get. I think they might try to get a young offensive guard to replace it. I think they might try to get a cornerback earlier. Maybe defensive end could wait a little bit just because of Mario Addison being a very recent addition that I actually did not have written in the script here earlier. That's why I forgot to mention him back when we were talking about the earlier defensive line. But that's sort of somebody that I could sort of see these positions filling in for the Bills, because if you're Buffalo, you're not really going to be focusing on one position as an absolute need right now, because there's not many of the positions I see them really, really gunning for. It's more just sort of patching up holes.
Yeah, Natane Muti is one that I really see them going for. I think they could really hit a home run if they try to address this offensive line early in the draft, because you need that to be able to protect Josh Allen. Now, Josh Allen can get around. He's a very mobile quarterback. But also at the same time, you've got to have him protected, because Josh Allen is at his best when he is protected well and he knows where he's going with the football and he can just absolutely sling it. And so I think a big key in getting Josh Allen's completion percentage up is not only adding weapons around him, but also protecting him.
Exactly.
Well, you got anything else to say about the Buffalo Bills?
Not too much. Only one more AFC East team to go. We're going to get on them first next time.
All right. Well, next time we are going to have the Patriots, the Saints. Seahawks.
Nope. Patriots, Saints, Vikings.
Patriots, yep. Saints, Vikings. And then the next episode is Ravens, Titans, Texans. When are the Texans?
Let me check real quick. We'll have Texans, Seahawks, Ravens.
Okay, Texans, Seahawks, Ravens. And then Titans, Packers.
Yeah. So essentially what we're doing, this episode was finishing up the end of the non-playoff teams and two more wild card. Next podcast is going to be wild card and then two divisional rounds. And then the Texans, Seahawks, Ravens will be the last of the divisional round teams. And then our final podcast, which will be essentially your top four teams of Titans, Titans, Packers, Niners, Chiefs are obviously then all of your championship and Super Bowl teams. So it ends up evening out pretty well.
Well, we will talk to you next time. we do these interviews, which are going to be coming out all week. We're really in draft mode. We do have some stuff going on this week, so we're going to try to get those out as quickly as possible and as efficiently as possible. But until next time, thank you so much for tuning in to the Blanket Coverage Podcast. I am Noah Parker from the Parker Home Studio in Nashville, Tennessee.
And I'm Jack Wallace out of Atlanta.
Peace, y'all.
Peace out, y'all.